We want to send millions of people into our courts capably representing themselves. They can do it with our combination of do-it-yourself technology and fractional legal services. That is our ultimate goal. That's where we started, where we hopefully will end, is just seeing the person-by-person impact on the courts. The goal ultimately is to change the way courts respond and courts operate in terms of being the, you know, the third leg of our government.
Today on Law Next, for those who have to go to court without a lawyer, navigating the justice system can be daunting. My guest today is Sonia Ebrun, co-founder and CEO of Courtroom 5, a unique company that addresses that problem by providing pro se litigants with the training, tools, and support they need to represent themselves. I'm Bob Ambrogi, and you're listening to Law Next, the podcast that features the innovators and entrepreneurs who are driving what's next in law. Before we get to today's interview, please take a moment to learn about the sponsors that support this podcast. Lally Law understands the unique challenges immigration lawyers face. That's why Lally Law comes equipped with flexible solutions that work in the background. With automatic form filling, government standardized workflows, full case management, and task and calendar reminders, all accessible from any device, Lally Law helps you manage your practice wherever you go. See why Lally Law is the number one ranked immigration case management solution at lallylaw.com. Now on to my interview with Sonia Ebrun. Sonia, welcome to Law Next.
Thank you for having me, Bob.
Sonia, first of all, I'm so thrilled to have you on my podcast, but I know you just launched your own podcast, so here's an opportunity. Plug it and get some new listeners. Tell us about your new podcast.
Our new podcast is entitled Who Wrote That Up For You? And there's a backstory involving my own experiences in court and just the response of a judge who just couldn't believe I'd written the argument. It is designed really to speak to people who are having to represent themselves in court, some of them doing so very well, and others who are running into judicial bias and some other issues in representing themselves. So we want to speak to them. We're trying to connect all of the wonderful work that is being done in access to justice to the people who need more access to justice.
And you are doing that every day.
Every weekday,
every
4 p.m.
Yeah, take the weekends.
Yeah, believe it, we need it. That's for sure. Every weekday, 4 p.m. Eastern time, we shoot for two brief interviews with, again, folks doing interesting work in the law, technology, access to justice. And again, just want to let the average consumer, legal consumer, know that there is help available for them and that we all as an industry are working on improving access to justice.
I gave a little bit of a description of Courtroom 5 in my introduction, but for those who are not familiar with it, why don't you explain what Courtroom 5 is?
Yeah, Courtroom 5, we're really reimagining delivery of legal services in the United States to close the justice gap that we're all familiar with. And so we are building a consumer marketplace for what we're calling fractional legal services. You all lawyers understand them as unbundled or limited scope services. Our goal is to serve the millions of lawyerless Americans who are handling protracted litigation in U.S. courts each year.
So there's two parts of this, right? There's the part in which you are helping pro se litigants handle their own matters directly through training and support. And then there's the part in which you are now providing unbundled legal services or making them available to litigants who want help with some particular part of a case, right? Do I have that right?
You've got that right. So our goal initially was to provide the tools and training to help people level up in court when they were handling really difficult cases. What we saw is that eventually people were using our tools and training in very particular ways and that their access to those tools was helping them use lawyers on an unbundled basis in the way a person coming off the street into a law office wouldn't be able to. They were able to specify very narrow, discrete legal task for lawyers. And so we're having great success in their cases relative to folks who didn't have that access. So we decided to just bring that on in-house. And so our solution is that combination of sort of DIY litigation tools and training, and then as needed, legal services.
I know you recently announced a partnership with Fastcase that is helping to facilitate that unbundled services part of it. How does that work? What is Fastcase doing or enabling?
Fastcase is one of our co-marketing partners. And so, as you may know, Fastcase probably has the largest reach of any legal vendor in the industry. And they help to just share the opportunity to acquire new clients with their readership and subscribers. And so we are just co-marketing with them. There's a couple other partners. We work with a subsidiary of Lawyers Mutual here in North Carolina to share the opportunity that we provide to small and solo firms as well. We've recently partnered with a very innovative law firm incubator here in North Carolina, the Incubator for Legal Practice and Innovation, it's called, to, again, just share the opportunity that we are providing for lawyers to be able to develop a different business model and help us close the justice gap.
Sonia, your background, you have a PhD in electrical engineering. Your co-founder, Deborah Sloan, is a PhD in library science, I believe, if I have that right. Neither of you are JDs or MBAs. How did you come to start Courtroom 5?
That's great. We got sued individually and together we've had experiences in court. You know, we both think we're fairly intelligent people. And like many Americans, we grew up with Judge Judy. We had a perspective on the court system where if you find yourself having to deal with court, you just go tell the judge what happened in your case, and hopefully the judge will make a good decision based on the law. We found out that the litigation process, our civil justice system, it doesn't work quite that way. And we got beat up in court, right, on that misunderstanding, as millions of Americans do each year. Unfortunately, this happened multiple times, but we're fast learners, each of us independently, and just decided that once we got some feet under our legs, so to speak, and could navigate these difficult procedures, that we owed it to ourselves and our communities to do something about it. You may know that when you get called into court for a hearing, the clerks will sort of arrange the cases, the docket, so that the more complicated cases are handled at the end. And ours tended to be the more complicated cases. We would have filed something or, you know, had a larger file than most other folks in court that day. And so we got to see the experience of other litigants routinely. And we came to court eventually knowing what to do and how to argue and that sort of thing. But we saw lots of other people, disproportionately Black and brown people, who just had no clue how to navigate the system. And so we wanted to find a way as non-lawyers to be able to address that that problem.
I mean, it's interesting because certainly a lot of people find themselves as pro se litigants caught up in the court system. And there are lots of people who have, you know, bad or good experiences maybe, but probably mostly bad experiences as pro se litigants in the court system. Not too many of them decide they're going to go out and start a company to try and deal with the problem. I mean, what was it that kind of motivated you to say, we really want to try and do something about this?
I'm an entrepreneur at heart. I actually got my start as a high school student here in Raleigh-Durham, you know, with Junior Achievement, making products, selling them door to door in local neighborhoods. I got derailed into engineering school. And, you know, one of the things that I guess I'm proud of at this age, at least, is that I like hard problems. And so decided to just continue into engineering because at the time, there weren't many Black women in particular in the field. And, you know, there was a sense that we couldn't progress in that field. Ended up with a PhD, ended up teaching it. Loved that. Certainly loved being in school. But eventually, I rediscovered my love for entrepreneurship. And this is actually my third adventure, I guess I'll call it, in entrepreneurship. And so the outlook for an entrepreneur is that when you see people experiencing a problem, and particularly as an engineer, you look for a solution to that problem. We sort of have a problem orientation, if you will. And so, again, I saw people struggling with the court system as I had initially. I had sort of figured it out for myself, but I had a PhD. That was eventually going to happen. And you should not have to have a degree like that, an advanced degree, in order to navigate what is a constitutional right, what is the ability to be heard in court. And so I saw a problem. I understood that Deborah and I together could form a solution. And so we just decided to do it. I have to admit, Deborah is much more of a scholar. She was much more comfortable in academia than I was. So I sort of had to drag her to this, to building the company with me.
Yeah. Did you, from the moment you decided to do that, did you have an image in your mind of what that solution was going to look like? Or was that something that became kind of a work in progress or evolved as you were developing
it? It evolved. We did not have an idea at all of what the solution would be, other than, we sort of had a vision of people being able to capably represent themselves in court in the way that we had learned to do. We wanted to send millions of others into courts, and we saw the capacity for change in the courts and in our democracy from doing that. But we didn't have, at the time we started, a solid idea of what the solution would look like to make that happen.
So what does that solution look like? I mean, I know you talked about it a little bit earlier in our conversation, but I'm somebody, I'm a pro se litigant. I hear about courtroom five. What happens? What do I do?
Sure. You sign up for a free account. We make all of the tools available and the training available on a limited basis for free. You sign up for a free account. You tell us what court you're in, what your claim type is, and what has been filed in your case. We need to understand your procedural history. I'll note here that we are working on importing that information automatically so that to reduce some of that manual labor. But nonetheless, we need to understand your procedural history because people find us at various states in their cases. Once we've understood where you are, our artificial intelligence agent takes over and sort of points you to some information and training that might be relevant to you at that stage of your case. We help you make a good decision on how to respond to the current situation in your case. Can't give legal advice, obviously, but we can point out some reasonable options. So, for instance, you don't need to worry about the admissibility of evidence when you've just been sued. You probably shouldn't worry about trying to dismiss a case if you're on the eve of trial. And so we just sort of locate you and help you understand what some of the options might be that you should learn about. And so, we give you the standards for various procedures at that point and help you make a good decision on how to respond. Once you've decided what to file, if anything, we walk you through an analysis of the claims and defenses in your case. As lawyers know, there are elements of all claims and defenses in the different states. And so we provide that information to users and just help them associate the underlying facts and any evidence they have with those elements. Sort of like building a house, right? Step by step through the case. But that exercise tends to surface the most appropriate argument for the filing you have chosen. Once you've identified an argument or a legal position, we then help you find legal support for it, legal authorities for it in the case law and your jurisdiction, in the statutes, rules of procedure, whatever there are. The final step then is to help you assemble all of that information into a legal document. You want to present your argument, any relevant facts from the procedural history or your underlying facts, and your legal support. And we help you just organize that into a legal document that looks like a lawyer prepared it. You'll file that with electronic filing instructions we've provided if that's available. And that cycle repeats. And in that way, we iteratively help you navigate the civil justice system in your case.
Yeah. And when you say we help you, I know you alluded to your AI chatbot, which is called Sylvia, I believe.
Yes.
They always have to have a name, right? And mostly women's names. I don't know why that is. But
yeah, there is a good reason for that, I'm sure.
but I mean, how much of this is you or human beings actually helping these litigants, or how much of it is the system guiding them through what needs to be done?
It's the system. We don't have any direct interaction with our users at all. Mm-hmm. Now, there is an online community where they can share their experiences and, you know, and that sort of thing. But we don't engage other than moderating. We don't engage in the community. It is completely self-service. We've got all the tools and the process. There's some automated email messages at various stages to help people along. But everything is automated, Courtroom 5. Now, having said that, we have recently begun to onboard lawyers onto our system for those situations where people need some actual legal advice or that sort of support. And so in a few jurisdictions currently, our customers are able to get that sort of human interaction. But otherwise,
depending on whether those jurisdictions allow unbundled services, is that
correct? That's correct. Yeah. Exactly. And actually that's in most of the country, right now. Yeah. You can provide it. And so we've sort of set up a portal for lawyers, a Shopify for legal services, if you will, where lawyers can specify the services they want to offer and the flat fees, for those services so that our customers in those jurisdictions can get that human interaction and actual legal services.
Yeah. So as I said, you're not a lawyer by training. How were these materials developed? Were lawyers involved in the development of them at all, or did they need to be involved in the development of them?
Somewhat, right. My co-founder, as you indicated, is a PhD librarian. And if you know anything about librarians, they are experts at curating complex information and making it accessible to lay people. And so Deborah has really taken on making public data accessible to individuals. Again, we're both academics. We're both very well experienced at curriculum development and making training available for adults. And so she's really taken the public data. There's some peculiar insights from our own experience as well that help us talk to people in that situation. But the law, luckily for us, is public. Right. And so we are just able to make it accessible to people in bite-sized fashion.
What type of case is appropriate for Courtroom 5? What type of case is not appropriate for Courtroom 5?
Great question. We tend to do best on protracted litigations, places where you are going to have to make some recourse to civil procedure. So, you know, you wouldn't want to handle your traffic ticket on Courtroom 5. Your small claims case, there are ample solutions, I think, commercially available if you need help in those situations. Our customers are generally handling, you know, home foreclosures, contested divorces, probate cases, debt collection. We've seen personal injury claims being handled, gross negligence, you name it. We've seen dozens of serious claim types handled on our application.
And does it matter whether they are plaintiffs or defendants? I mean, are most of them in a defensive posture in these cases? Or
the vast majority are in defensive postures, but the process works exactly the same, no matter what your role in the case.
Is there any... I'm a lawyer. I don't practice as much as I used to, but... I know from when I did practice and deal with clients a lot, one of the issues that clients often have is just really kind of trying to decide to what extent to fight a matter, to what extent it's worth putting the effort into fighting a matter. Is there anything in Courtroom 5 that can help a client evaluate whether to pursue a matter or how hard to fight a matter?
Not directly. We would not give any of our users that kind of advice. We can't evaluate their cases for them.
You don't want to practice law.
We don't want to practice law. That's exactly right. But I will say that, and you all know, even for lawyers, the litigation process isn't something you engage in lightly. It is a lot of work, particularly for non-lawyers. Very heavy and steep learning curve for folks to get up to speed on this in the timeframes that are required. And so, you know, I think people can independently weigh whether the issue is important enough for them to do that work or not. So we don't give them advice, but we do see lots of folks, and this is why we have a free version, a free opportunity for people to evaluate it. We want people to understand the work that is required for them to level up in court. And if the issue is important enough for them, then we invite them to subscribe and pay the monthly membership.
Yeah. And have you found that there are, among the people who use the system, that they're, I don't know, is a certain type of person who's going to be more successful using Courtroom 5 or proceeding on their own using Courtroom 5? You know, what have you learned about that?
I think there's certainly some correlation between our longest users and the education level. So we've served people with high school diplomas and we've served people with PhDs. Certainly the more facility you have with reading and writing, comprehending, the better you're going to do on work like this. But then again, I mean, I do my own customer discovery personally. I will sit with people for 15 minutes just to do a survey to understand their experiences. You know, and I've met union folks that were members of unions with a high school diploma who were just committed to redressing a wrongful termination that he believed he had. So, you know, again, I've spoken with a number of our customers. They range just across the board in terms of age, in terms of ethnic background, in terms of, you know, location. It's underlying all of their commitment is just a desire to redress a grievance, right? Or to defend themselves against what they think is a, you know, wrongful litigation. And so there's an attitude of stick-to-itiveness amongst these people, a sense that they have a right to be in the courts and just are committed to making it work for them.
Yeah. And are you in all 50 states, operating in all 50 states?
Yeah. We have served at least one customer in all 50 states and in some of the underlying, the outlying territories as well. I think I remember at least one customer from Guam, and we've served people in Puerto Rico. But yeah, at least one person in states. I will say, obviously, there are a large number of customers historically in California and Texas and New York and the larger population centers, Florida and whatnot. But yeah, we've seen at least one person handle their litigation from every state.
Yeah. Sonia, are you sort of keeping any data around any of this? I mean, are you tracking outcomes of the people who use your system or doing anything to try and evaluate whether it's working or how to make it better or anything like that?
We do. We collect a good bit of data on, you know, specific usage throughout the litigation, but also we do exit surveys and I'll just find out if particularly when a customer has terminated the service, why are they terminating? And oftentimes it's because their case is concluded and we want to know how it's concluded. So we've seen some somewhat astonishing results. We're still in the early days here. But over the experience of thousands of cases, we've seen a little over 70% of our customers historically either winning or settling their cases. And that is without access to the fractional legal services that we're bringing, making available to them at this point. So, you know, I think there is something to be said for the average person's ability to be able to manage their own cases when they have meaningful legal tools and training.
Yeah. Well, as you say, when it matters to them, they're going to fight for it more strenuously. And obviously it matters. Has there been anything about, again, you kind of came into this from your own, based on your own experience, but is there anything that you've been learning about the experiences of others that's helped you either refine the product or that's going to help you kind of define the future development of the product?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, one of the primary jobs of a startup is to learn from your customers. And so we started years ago with just a WordPress blog and trying to share some of the experiences that Deborah and I had in court. We have learned from feedback from our customers about the needs for access to case law and training on how to issue spot and find the most appropriate supporting authorities. We've learned about the document workflows that people need. So I should just say we've got a document workflow for pretty much everything you'd want to file in a civil case, a wide variety of motions and responses, the discovery instruments, even appellate briefs. We've got workflows for, notices of this or that, everything you would need. But our customers have educated us on the sorts of workflows they need and the sorts of training and tools they need to do a good job. We continue to learn from them, both from surveys and interviews, but also from tracking their performance in the app itself, collecting some data on where they find friction in working with our software so that we can remove that and make their lives easier. That's a long-term goal. In addition, I think we've got a long roadmap for the development of our artificial intelligence and making that more powerful, more granular, as we learn from the experience of other users. We want to be able to, you know, just automatically provide the information and I'll say carefully, provide the automated guidance that people need to be able to stand up on these very difficult tasks.
Yeah. You talked about removing some of the friction. And one of the issues that sort of bothers me about, as much as I love legal technology and love following legal technology, one of the issues that often bothers me about technology is this idea that maybe it's creating an imbalance in the playing field, that you know, larger firms that have lots of money to spend on technology are going to get an upper hand, even over smaller law firms, let alone pro se litigants in certain kinds of matters. If it's a matter that involves a lot of documents or data, for example, or where they're maybe using analytics to try and get an upper hand. I mean, do you see that imbalance at all in the cases that come through Courtroom 5? And is there anything that you can do to help pro se litigants with that imbalance?
I'm not sure. You know, as an engineer and technologist, my perspective is that technology is a tool, like a hammer or, you know, any other tool. You can use a hammer to place a nail in a wall. You can use a hammer to kill somebody. I mean, it depends on how we as humans use that technology. And so, you know, I think our goal is to use it to help our customers handle a very difficult episode in their lives. There are obviously ways to use that same technology for ill. We've got good people on our team. We certainly have some strong values around the ways that we're going to develop this, the ways that we use the data we collect, and so on. It helps us to be transparent about what we're doing as an external check as well. But it all comes down to the way human beings use the technology that's going to be available. Understand, the technology is going to be developed. There really isn't a way to stop the growth of technology. What we've got to do is provide some ethical guardrails around the use of that technology so that we can get the best outcomes.
Among legal tech companies, Courtroom 5 is unique in its approach to helping pro se litigants manage complex cases through a combination of technology and unbundled legal help. In fact, Ebrin distinguishes her company from the legal tech market, instead placing Courtroom 5 among a growing number of justice tech companies devoted to helping those who are not lawyers or legal professionals. When we return, we'll talk more about what that means and what the broader impact might be. But first, let's take a moment to learn about the sponsors who support Law Next. Immigration lawyers need the flexibility to meet their clients wherever they are. With Lolly Law, you can provide customized solutions for every unique case you take on. With built-in features like Lolly Payments, your firm can easily create automated payment plans, send payments via SMS, and accept payments online or in person, so you can provide a hassle-free payment experience that gets you paid faster. To learn more about how Lolly Law can support your practice, go to lollylaw.com. Welcome back to Law Next. I guess Sonia Ebrin was motivated by her own experiences as a pro se litigant to develop a way to help others who found themselves in court without a lawyer. In the second part of our interview, we're going to talk more about the shortcomings of the justice system that led to the need for a company such as Courtroom 5, and we'll hear more about Sonia's longer-term vision for the company. Let's get back to that interview. I'm not familiar with any other companies out there doing what you're doing. I mean, there are providers that are helping pro se litigants in very specific ways, you know, in a landlord-tenant matter, perhaps, or a debt matter, or providing materials. But you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm not really familiar with anybody else doing what you're doing. What do you think the impact kind of ripple effect might be of Courtroom 5 in terms of the justice system more broadly or at large?
You know, I don't know of anyone who's doing precisely what we're doing either. And they say one company in a space is a hobby, two companies is an industry. And right, so we right. welcome, certainly welcome competition in this space. But I would also say that there are dozens of companies who are, as you said, serving pro se litigants in one way or another and trying to provide greater access to our court systems. I am one of the Courtroom 5, rather, is one of the founding members of the Justice Technology Association. And we have, again, dozens of companies, most of us startups, who are providing these sorts of do-it-yourself technology solutions for legal consumers. You know, I think there's tremendous opportunity, even though we are working very hard to develop an ecosystem here. There's tremendous opportunities for lawyers and just people with experience in the courts to develop tech solutions, because in no way have we solved this problem. There's ample opportunity for entrepreneurs to come in and create other solutions for access to justice.
Yeah. And I know the Justice Technology Association was created earlier this year. Maya Markovich is, as executive director or whatever
Wonderful.
The title is.
That she is.
But I wonder if you could just elaborate a little bit on what that organization is about and what you're doing there.
Sure. I mean, we saw the opportunity to educate regulators and investors and the public on the growth of justice technology, right? We are all familiar with legal tech, but one of our advisors, Ken Friedman, used to be the one of the top legal officers at LegalZoom, chairs our advisory board. And he is fond of telling me that legal tech is really law firm tech. It is geared to help law firms do better in their in their practices, in their firms. But the work that me at Courtroom 5 and some of these other startups providing legal technology for consumers, we needed to brand that differently. And I believe he's the one that, at least in my mind, came up with the term justice tech. And we saw a lot of companies that were having the same conversations with regulators, with consumers, and with investors. And we wanted to just sort of streamline that and to grow a collective voice so that we could, raise the level of our conversations with all of those constituents. And so that's what we've done. That's what we are doing with the Justice Tech Association.
Do you see the need for a company such as Courtroom 5 as a failure of the justice system in some way? In other words, if the courts were doing their jobs, would we need you?
The answer is flatly and plainly no. I would love to see the courts doing what we're doing. We're trying to resolve a deficiency of the courts themselves. Now, every court, the courts don't need to operate like Judge Judy, but there are lots of opportunities for courts to better serve their primary user right now, which is a pro se litigant. There's no need to treat every case as though both sides are represented. There's no need to expect a layperson to fully understand the procedures. We see over and over people coming to court, on motions to dismiss, on summary judgment motions, across the board, having really no ability to contribute meaningfully to that discussion. And I would love to see at every one of those hearings, a judge just simply explain what the litigants are there to talk about that day, what the standards are, and to elicit, a legal argument from people who have no background in the law. We are doing this for our customers because the courts won't provide that basic instruction. And so, yeah, I'd love to see and believe courts should do what we're doing at Courtroom 5. But in the absence of that, and that's a heavy lift for courts. Yeah. Courts just don't, right? We're not going to see that, frankly. We're not going to see that happen in any meaningful time frame. And so, in the absence of that, this is a danger to our democracy to have millions of people a year being, in my opinion, mistreated by the courts in this way. We can't survive as a country, as a democracy, certainly, with that happening on a regular basis. And so I'm happy that Courtroom 5 is able to at least in some way stand in the gap.
Yeah. There's been a lot of talk that the pandemic did in some way accelerate the courts, the accessibility of the courts or some of the reforms necessary in the courts to make themselves more usable and accessible by pro se litigants in particular. What's your thought on that? Have you seen any improvements over the last few years?
I have. I was really excited to see the ability of for pro se litigants to e-file, to file their documents electronically. This has been in many courts a requirement for lawyers. In some courts, pro se litigants were allowed to e-file. In others, they weren't at all. And so certainly the physical closure of the courts forced them to make services available electronically. That was good. Also, the prevalence now of Zoom hearings, right? People would oftentimes have to take a day off work and sit in the courtroom for hours at a time to have their 15-minute hearing. Now with Zoom meetings, they can do that from home or a library or, some other location, and they don't have to spend as much time sitting in a courtroom. All of that's good. There are some other opportunities. I think I'd love to see courts in that direction. What we're seeing instead, though, is now that courts are physically open, some courts are going backwards. They are removing some of those options that the pandemic had forced them to provide. And I think that's the wrong direction. We really do need more access to the courts. And the best way for them to open the courts is to do so electronically.
Yeah, and there was even the Pew study that came down, I think it was earlier this year, maybe late last year, that said, yeah, in a lot of ways, the courts did take a lot of big steps forward, but often some of those steps ended up better serving the established players in the courts, yep. The lawyers and those who were already used to navigating that system and didn't always work to the benefit of the pro se people.
That's right. That is right. There's some structural biases there that ultimately we'll have to address.
Yeah. You've raised some money, I think. I saw, I don't know, Crunchbase said like roughly $500,000. Is that right? Or is there more than that?
No, and I should update our Crunchbase profile. It's a bit more than that. We've raised a little over $1 million. I'll happily say about a quarter of that has been non-dilutive, so not equity funding. We've won pitch competitions and the like. But we're TechStars grad. We've received some backing from Google for Startups, from CEO, now rebranded to Corralus. It's a women-oriented fund. And we've also taken institutional venture capital. So we are a startup. Our goal is to change the world, to serve the millions of people who need our services. And that takes institutional venture capital.
Yeah. So what is the future of changing the world for you? I mean, what's your vision for this company over the next 5 years or even 10 years?
Sure. It's the same as it has always been. We want to send millions of people into our courts capably representing themselves. They can do it with our combination of do-it-yourself technology and fractional legal services. That is our ultimate goal. That's where we started, where we hopefully will end, is just seeing the person by person impact on the courts. And the goal ultimately is to change the way courts respond and courts operate in terms of being the third leg of our government. It's important that courts are more responsive to our people, to the American people. And so our goal is to help them do that.
Where did the name come from?
Courtroom Five. So Deborah and I, as I indicated earlier, we started with just bare bones service to people we thought could help, could learn our experience from our experiences. And we started getting some traction and realized that we needed to brand this thing. We were in a business meeting with some music in the background, just brainstorming on names. And Deborah at one point said, you know, we could call this courtroom anything. Well, in the background, we were listening to Looney's I Got Five on it. It's a hip hop song about some guys trying to buy a bag of weed and one had $5. And so the chorus line came on at that time. I got five on it. And we looked at each other and I think I or Deborah said, let's just put five on it. And Courtroom Five was born.
That's great. Well, again, I've asked you a lot of questions about Courtroom Five and about your background. But is there anything else that you'd like to say that I haven't asked you about?
You know, I think there is a lot of work to be done in the regulatory environment. We, you know, try to play above board and are transparent with the regulators. We reach out to them proactively to make sure they understand our services. But we are stymied by some of the UPL and fee splitting restrictions, the law firm ownership restrictions that just sort of slow us down. Mm-hmm. There are millions of people who need access to legal services, access to the courts, and we could move a lot faster if regulators understood that we're all on the same side, mm-hmm. right? That we are all about protecting consumers and making sure that folks get the services they need and pay for. And, you know, I'd like to see more states borrow the lessons from Utah, from Arizona, stay away from California right now, right? But just sort of explore sandboxes and other avenues for understanding our ecosystem and understanding that we are really all on the same side and can work together. And that's, you know, that's something I think that a lot of folks in other regulated industries have managed to do, whether it is transportation with Uber and Lyft, or, you know, hotel industries with Airbnb and some other providers there. We need to do the same in legal and figure out how better to work together because people need what we're offering.
Have you sought to participate in any way in the Utah sandbox or the Arizona Alternative Legal Services Providers program there?
We're exploring it. We've been looking at it for a good while now. Our challenge with Utah, frankly, is that we haven't figured out how to break the law there in a meaningful way, right? Our operations are what they are.
In other words, what to do differently in Utah than what you're doing anywhere else.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. I serve on the board of Responsive Law with Justice Dino Monis there, who the former justice. Yeah. And I'm just so, I so admire him and the work that they did in Utah. I think it's just been a tremendous experiment. Again, I'd love to see more states do that. We are hoping to do something similar here in North Carolina. I'd love to see that grow. But we need to move faster as an industry towards some reform because, again, unlike the experience with Uber and Airbnb and those other regulated industries, the problem that we are solving in legal tech is a problem of democracy. This is much more serious than, you know, laying your head on a pillow at night, you know, or getting a ride across town. Yeah. We have got to solve this. And I would just call on regulators across the country to think more deeply and rapidly about this problem.
Yeah. Don't hold your breath. It's not happening as quickly as I think some of us thought it might be happening.
I understand that, but you know, let me just also share that Justice Tech is happening.
Yeah.
All right, and so they have got to either get on board or get steamrolled because we're coming through.
Yeah. Good. Watch out. Sonia, it's been a real honor to speak with you, and congratulations on everything you've built and accomplished with Courtroom Five. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Bob. It's been a great pleasure.
My sincere thanks to Sonia Ibran, co-founder and CEO of Courtroom Five, for taking the time to speak with me today. What are your thoughts on today's show? Share them by tweeting us at LawNext Podcast. LawNext is produced, engineered, and edited by Populous Radio. I'm your host, Bob Ambrogi. I hope you'll join us again next time for another episode of LawNext.